You mentioned a particular episode from your days as a broker in which you felt that you'd learned from the experience. Are there any similar episodes in connection with your early days jobbing which you feel you learned from experience? Did you have any particular disasters or any particular successes?
Well, I felt things were going my way for the first year because I didn't do any, didn't make a fantastic amount of money, and neither did I lose a lot of money. But I felt that the amount of business that Charles was doing was increasing all the time, and I felt that that I contributed to it rather earlier than I expected to. And there were a lot of young dealers on the floor on those days, and I was still comparatively young, and people liked dealing with people of their own age, people they could get on with. And I felt that certainly my first year had gone as I expected it, as good as I could have expected.
Mm-hmm. How did your career with the firm progress? At some point did you become a partner?
I got a bit bored because compared with the life as a broker, we weren't doing that many bargains a day. Getting at 10, leaving at sort of 3:30, sometimes going home then. Really, I wasn't being pushed, I wasn't being stretched as much as I felt I should be as a person. And I think it was boredom. I was getting a little bit, after a year, I was getting a bit bored with it. And I felt I was making moves to go back into broking, purely for that reason, not for the financial reasons at all. And I saw several firms about the possibility. I had one or two offers. And Charlesworth got to hear of it. But I did indicate that, and I was quite open about it. I think it coincided with a sort of upturn in business, and I was doing a bit more. And anyway, I changed my mind, and I was offered a partnership, and I took it. And so I'd only been with Charlesworth for 18 months, and I became a partner. Again, on terms which I thought were quite favourable. I was earning ever so much more than I was as a broker. And I was only doing half the work.
What did partnership entail in terms of responsibility within the firm?
Well, you were on your own. Your anything you made or lost was relevant to what you were going to make or going to lose. So when decisions were made, too, you were fully consulted, and although you were junior in age to the others, you one felt you had greater responsibility.
How many other partners were there with the firm at this time?
There were three very elderly partners, one who was a sleeping partner, who only saw very occasionally, but he left his money in the firm. Two other older partners, one of whom never worked on a Wednesday.
Why was that?
He'd never apparently worked on a Wednesday all his working life. In those days, he got to get away with that sort of thing. So he was hopeless on Thursday because he couldn't, you know, he couldn't remember what happened the previous day because he wasn't there. And then there was Reginald Block, who was there every day, and his son Richard, who was roughly the same age as me.
Did you have many dealers or many blue buttons?
Yes, from time to time, but not many, no. Mm. We had the odd blue button. Mm.
And how was the business actually organised? Did you have a separate long book, a separate short book?
No, in those days we did everything. Nothing was divided at all. It was only later years that we we set up. In fact, we were one of the last firms to have a separate book, Shorts and Longs.
So how did you interact, as it were, when you were all standing there together? Were you all dealing with similar sized business, or was there a kind of rising scale? Were you consulting with each other? Were you chatting with each other?
Oh yes, we were all together. So anybody got a larger order, they could consult if they wanted to. I mean, I suppose I did the smaller business because I hadn't been there long enough. But, you know, the others had the more experience for that.
And about how much capital did you need to run your book?
I think there were not a great deal. I mean, if you want to, I could have a look and consult a few the whole balance sheets if you want me to let. I can't remember exactly what it was, but I've got some details in the bag if you're interested to hear.
Were you conscious of the jobbing firms around you, in the sense that there was a diminishing number of jobbing firms, and that the smaller firms like you, more often than not, seemed to be either disappearing as older partners retired, or were merging with other jobbing firms?
Yes, but to us it didn't seem to matter, because we seemed to be picking up the business from them. So it didn't do us any harm.
Mm-hmm. You've already mentioned the larger jobbing firms in the gilt market, in the sense that you would often go and undo business with them. How often would this happen? Was it fairly frequent? Was it a daily
occurrence? Depends how much business was going on, really. Mm. Yes, it might be once or twice a day.
Mm. And were they very competitive, in the sense that if you were in a corner, they would not take advantage of you, but either get you to lower your price?
Yes, I think they were. I think they felt it was their duty probably to give us reasonable terms when dealing with us. We weren't really in those days encroaching on their business at all.
And did you have particular relationships with one or two of the bigger firms, or if you wanted to undo a position, would you go and check a price with a range of them?
Yes, in those days, probably we did more with Wed than we did with Aykroyd. Difficult to remember. They were nearer to us.
Mm. And did you often see the government broker?
In those days, he dealt with the larger firms. Mm. He didn't really have much dealings with him. It was only later that we had more dealings with him.
And what caused that?
The business widened, became more. We took on probably larger business, and there were more tap stocks around, more new issues and so forth. And preference was still given to larger firms. Mm.
Now, you mentioned earlier that when you did join Charlesworth, the gilt market wasn't particularly profitable market. Did this change?
Yes, I think gilts became a better market. And I think there were more people holding gilts and dealing in gilts. And you didn't want to, you make money, I think, when the market is moving one way or the other. If it stays without moving for too long a period, there's not much money to be made. Mm. Mm. I think back in whenever it was, market started moving, and We were making much more money.
This is a period, if we go forward a little bit in time to the early 1970s, when a number of jobbing firms either disappeared from the Gilt Edge market, firms like Francis and Praed, or you had a firm like Smith Brothers trying to come into the market,
yes,
but only lasting for a short time, and then withdrawing. Again, was this something that you, as a smaller Gilt Edge jobbing firm, was conscious of?
Oh yes, well we had, this was the time of the, was it the white paper?
Yes.
It was the time of the white paper when it became a freer market. Movements became much greater, and you had to be on the ball. You know, there was, and I suppose the expertise which we had built up saw off the newcomers. And the opportunity was there for us to do a bigger percentage of business. That's at the time when we started dealing in larger amounts. We were forced to, really. We were expected to deal in larger amounts.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit? Why were you being forced, and where was the pressure?
Well, actually, the position in the market, this was the time when the stock exchange, in our particular case, where you were in the market, actually, physically, did have a quite an important effect.
By this stage, had you moved to the new house?
This was a transitional stage, when the old stock exchange was being rebuilt, and we were in a temporary building. Our particular pitch was the most uncomfortable pitch in the whole temporary building. We were in a narrow passageway, but and on one side, it was very cold, and terrible place to be, really. And it was the last place we really wanted to be. But in actual fact, it couldn't have been better, because we had Wedd in one side of us and Aykroyd the other. And to get from one to the other, everybody had to pass us. We were fully aware the whole time what was going on. And so we very rarely caught out by when the when there'd been a change in the market. We started dealing larger in shorts and things like that, which we never dealt in before. And we were doing very well, because anybody who was dealing was passing our pitch. Almost had to brush past us. And kept us on our toes the whole time.
So did this mean you were seeing different brokers?
Yes, we started dealing with a much wider range of brokers. And we became more competitive, and the risks were there, but the risk not only to lose money, but also the opportunity of making money.
Was this a cause for concern for you as partners, that somehow you were dealing in larger size, and therefore you were a lot more vulnerable to moves in the market?
Oh, very much more, yes. Yes, gone are the days when you went home with a level book or anything like that. No, it became a bit more fraught.
Were there situations where you were caught out?
Yes, sometimes. But more than made up for the other times.
Do any particular instances stand out in the memory?
Well, what's the expression? About not taking prisoners?
Hostages to fortune.
I think it was one Christmas we were up at some broker's party. And I think Richard Block and I, we were both up there, leaving one elderly partner on the pitch, I think. And there'd been quite a lot going on, but it was lunchtime, and it was usually quiet. And there were, knowing where we were, the partner on the floor dealt with this particular broker in a fairly large amount of stock, larger than we would normally deal. They were known to be tricky customers. We've been caught out before by them. And of course, it was a terrible error. There we were, being wined and dined upstairs, and actually being taken to cleaners on the floor.
How did you get yourself out of these positions? Did you then go to the large jobbers and unwind a position, or did you ever go to the government broker?
One used to go and try and get out of your positions with the larger firms, and it sometimes suited them, because sometimes the business that you were doing was opposite to what they were doing. And I suppose it was about the time when we started dealing with the government broker more often. And he was still dealing mainly with the larger firms.
Can you explain what dealing with the government broker involved?
Well, I mean, you're aware of what went on when there was a Tapstock around. I mean, you could always put up terms to him.
Can you explain that in a bit more detail?
Well, you could do business with him by taking tap stock against other stocks and so forth, rather than just plain taking the tap stock. And he's aware of the prices, and he wouldn't always give you a straight answer.
Was the technique in gilt jobbing different to the technique one would have used in equity jobbing?
I would say it was. I think this is where Smith Brothers came unstuck. They came onto the floor and immediately started wheeling and dealing in government stock. Equities all move in different directions depending on what stock it is. And the gilts tend to move together. There's not a great variety of different prices between. They all move up, all move down. But they seemed to be treating each stock independently. And because of their lack of experience. That explains the difference, I think.
Now, by this stage, again, switching the focus onto you, were you feeling as if now jobbing would be your career on the stock exchange? You'd given up thoughts of returning to...
Oh yes, long since given up thoughts. I'd been out of broking too long by then. Yes.
Had you married?
Yes, I'd married. In fact, I'd married before I had changed over from broking to jobbing. I just got married.
How had you met your wife? Was it through connections in the city?
From home, really. Yes.
And where were you living at this time in the early 1970s?
I was living in Beckenham.
Perhaps you could describe the daily routine at this stage, in the sense that a typical day in your working life from leaving home and so on. About what time would you leave home in the morning?
I don't know when we started getting up early, but it used to be very gentlemanly. I used to catch the 8:47, I remember, from Beckenham in the early days. And then I was too early, you know, I had time to kill before the market started at 10. I forget when we went back to starting at 9:30.
And what was the first place you went to? Was it the floor of the house, or was it the office itself?
I think we went straight to the floor very often. I think one of us used to go up to the office to get the books.
Which newspaper were you reading?
I used to take the Telegraph, and then once somebody used to take the Financial Times, and we used to, if there were, you know, there was anything interesting, we all took different newspapers, I seem to think, and if there was anything interesting in any of them, we used to exchange information when we got there. There were always plenty of Financial Times around.
So about 10 o'clock you would converge on the pitch?
That's right, yes.
And then what would happen?
Well, one took stock of what the situation was and whether there any likely to be any changes and so forth. And one didn't deal before you managed to be aware what the large. This is the old going back to the floor before the temporary market, before the white paper. You had to be aware of what the large firms were doing, really. It was important to get hold of, somehow get hold of information as to what the sort of prices they were making, because you were very much reliant on them.
How would you go about doing that?
Oh, there was certain information you used to get hold of through friendly brokers. You know, there was a fairly good underground system of knowledge going around.
Would you be chatting with the other smaller jobbing firms?
Oh, yes. We used to do business with them sometimes. I guess we may have been competitive, but we were also very friendly with them. I guess some of your best friends were your competitors.
And then presumably you would start dealing with the brokers as they came in or sent their dealers in.
Yes, that's right. You used to come in waves very often. You used to do nothing, and then you do a lot of business, and then nothing again.
Would you take a break for lunch at some stage?
Oh, yes. In those days, it was very gentlemanly, and one used to take your hour, and you were even able to have a couple of pints of beer sometimes. And that was so relaxing, really, because if you weren't doing a lot of business, one could do that and without any worries at all. It was a very sociable sort of situation.
And about when was the house closing at this stage?
3:30, I think.
And what were you doing then? Were you going back to the office?
Yes, went up to the office.
And what were you doing there?
We used to take telephone calls from brokers who wanted to deal with us. Mm. In fact, we stayed, before I joined them, Charlesworth used to go home very early. After hours, it was almost impossible to reach them. I used to be so annoyed. I think that's one of the things I did change. I think I managed to persuade them to we ought to take to do after more after hours business from brokers who wanted a deal. And one used to calculate one's profit and loss in those days by hand. Didn't have calculators and things. One used to do it by. I was never any good at maths, but I somehow managed to work these things out satisfactorily.
Were computers and that kind of equipment beginning to impinge?
Not really, no, only later. The very simple calculators, but only later that computers started rearing their ugly head and sort of taking their.
And about what hour of the day would you be shutting up shop and going home?
Well, one used to, when times were quiet, we used to take turns to go home at 4. Mm. But, yes, 5:30.
Mm. And about how much time were you taking in the way of holidays? Or was this fairly flexible?
As long as you didn't clash with anybody else, it was all right. Mm-hmm. Naturally, the older partners had the first say. Mm. But I suppose one took. You never took more than 3 weeks, I don't think, in those days.
Now, by about 1973, you'd moved into the new house, but also the economy was beginning to go into a fairly severe recession in 1974. Do you have any particular memories of that time when stock exchange values crashed and there was a loss of business confidence, there was the oil crisis, there was the 3-day week. Was it a difficult time for business?
I don't think it was. It was difficult, but I don't think it didn't seem to affect our business too much. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think we profited from it, actually.
In what ways was your particular jobbing technique suited to those kinds of situations, suited to a bear market?
one used to make more money in a bear market than a bull market.
Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, you're actually receiving interest in a bear market instead of paying it out. Unfortunately, I probably didn't make as much money as we should have done, in that some of the partners were better, hated being a bear. It was against their natural inclination. The older partners always wanted to be a bull. I think as younger partners, we were happier to go away to be all square and to be a bear, but could never get through to the older partners. But there was more money, I'm sure, to be made in the bear market than the bull market.
By this stage, were you beginning to think ahead to the future of the firm and try and map a path for it?
Yes, the older partners gradually went away. And by that time, one had built up a certain amount of capital so the firm could keep running without any... But you were obviously... The expense of the firm were rising. You were no longer, you know, it wasn't a sort of armchair situation. One had to be aware of the expenses of running a firm, and you couldn't run it on a shoestring any longer. It was becoming a very different sort of business.
Will you be encouraged to take on more business as more Gilt Age jobbing firms disappeared?
I think you were. Yes, I think you were taking on more business. So one had to update one's systems and probably employ more staff. We went into bigger offices, which were only a stone's throw from the stock exchange. Very good. Obviously, you're paying out more in rent and rates. But it was a pretty good life.
Did you ever contemplate joining with an equity jobber and trying to expand the firm in that way?
Only later, during my time there. But that was scotched. Not seriously, I don't think. Not until later, anyway.
Yes, about when you say later?
I think we were having a difficult time. Probably about 1980, I think. Well, the early 80s.
And were there other firms around looking to merge with a Gilt jobbing firm?
Yes, probably there were. Yes, they were trying to spread their risks, I suppose.
Well, we think of the latter part of the 70s as a time when the government was issuing a lot of stock, and when a lot of the business in the stock exchange, in terms of value, certainly was gilt-edged. Did you feel that you were in the particularly lucrative end of the stock exchange?
Yes, there was. That was the end to be. There was a lot of money being made. You had fixed commission rates in those days, and so brokers were making money hand over fist. They were issuing loads of government stock. The more stock was issued, the more turnover there was. There was a lot of money to be made. But the market was volatile. You had to keep on your toes. But if one was sensible and kept within one's... didn't overtrade, there was money to be made, no doubt about it.
Were you feeling any pressures on single capacity, on the jobbing system? Were you conscious of any pressure to change single capacity? Again, thinking
no,
about
I don't think I was. I felt that it was um, Yes, there had been, over the years, there had been mutterings and so forth. But we felt it was a good system, competitive system. The amount of money we took out of it was small compared with turnover, very small. Mm-hmm. All along, the return was minute. And I felt the jobbing system all the way along. I felt it was a very good system in that it did actually, a person could always deal whenever they could always deal at a price. And the fact you had a buffer, a jobbing system there, meant that it cut down on the volatility of the market. Jobbers might buy a lot of stock instead of, as these days, the fact it gets around, there's been a load of selling on market, and everybody marks the stocks down. They might have even put the stocks up on the board. I believe that happened, used to happen in the equity market. I mean, it masked the fact.